Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Receiving this message.
We are Ken Jennings and John Roderick. We speak to you from our present, which we can only assume is your distant past, the turbulent time that was the early 21st century.
Fearing the great cataclysm that will surely befall our civilization, we began this monumental reference of strange and obscure human knowledge. These recordings represent our attempt to compile and preserve wonders and esoterica that would otherwise be lost.
So whether you're listening from an advanced civilization or have just reinvented the technology to decrypt our transmissions, this is our legacy to you.
This is our time capsule. This is the Omnibus.
You have accessed entry 705.JB0712. Certificate number 46594. The Law of the Tongue.
Do you observe the law of the tongue? This is what I say to somebody when I walk up to them on the street. I hold up my hand in a secret gesture and I say, do you follow the law of the tongue?
Yeah, it's my code, the law of the tongue.
What would you say the law of the tongue is?
The law of the tongue. You know, I have a I have a pretty good relationship with my tongue. Like it's a I have a condition on my tongue.
You have a weird tongue.
And so I growing up, I thought about it a lot. Thought about my tongue maybe more than other people did.
Tongue mindfulness.
I did have tongue awareness because it was sensitive. But I like having a tongue, and I use it a lot every day.
Can't really imagine not having one. Like if you're one of those
people, there are people that don't have them. People that are members of the Ellen James Society don't have them.
Well, people who are maybe captured by. Some kind of
tongue stealing pirates.
Yeah. Some kind of pirate, some kind of corsair or a shadowy secret society out in the steppes or the forest somewhere.
They'll cut out your tongue. Yeah. That was a threat that seemed to appear in movies a lot more when we were kids than it does recently. Seems like it would really suck to lose your tongue.
The tongue in this story is not. Blah, 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 blah. The tongue in this story weighs tons.
Oh, my tongue weighs a ton.
This is not your tongue.
Oh.
It's a whale tongue.
Oh, more whales. I love when we talk about whales.
Didn't we just do whaling? I was trying to remember when it was.
It's really hard. We were just saying that that when you and I remember something that feels like it must have happened in the last 5 years, it's almost certainly at least 15 years old.
This was you learning just moments ago. That Serena Williams is a better tennis player than Venus Williams.
Well, I was like,
you're a little late. But.
So the Venus or the Williams sisters, like they're kind of new on the tennis scene, and you're like, yeah,
yeah, they're the hot new thing. They're the hottest new players of 1994. We take requests now from listeners who have supported the show.
We have for a while, and I think we've felt like recently we've done a lot of request shows because we had a lot of new donors.
We had a surge.
And now they're all coming. What would you say? They're all ripening their status as longtime givers.
They're coming due.
They're coming due.
They and people have great show suggestions. In this case, Matt sent over a list of suggestions that without saying I'm Australian, really said Oh, I'm Australian. Matt is hoping we'll do a show about bungee jumping.
Uh-huh.
Matt is hoping we'll do a show about where Skylab crashed.
Oh.
Spoilers, Australia.
I remember the day.
That is a good story.
That we were so excited about. It was coming down.
That's been on my list for a while, and that will 100% be in the show. But he mentioned something I did could not recognize as Australian or otherwise. He asked if we would do a show on the law of the tongue. Mm-hmm. And I had no idea. Usually it's a PG show.
It does seem kind of Australian, though.
I mean, what would that be in Australia?
The law of the tongue.
You walk up to somebody and you take a big bite of Vegemite and you just lick them across the face.
I could see there being some kind of Australian rules wrestling where you have to, like, hold on to your opponent's tongue, and the two of you, it's kind of like that. It's kind of like the scene in Michael Jackson's Beat It, where the two gang leaders have their wrists tied together in a knife fight, except you have to hold on to your opponent's tongue.
Except your tongues are tied together?
Well, and you also have a knife, so it's like you either kill your opponent or the first person to let go of the other one's tongue loses.
You've played Knifey Tonguey before. I think it would just be like a social thing. Like every morning, we don't know this in the Northern Hemisphere, but Australians just show up at work and they just lick their boss across the face. And the boss says,
licks him back.
You had steak again last night, didn't you, Kyle? And gives him a big lick across the jowls.
I'm glad we're getting your Australian accent, which we hardly ever get.
It's not good and I've never tried it before.
I like it though. You're throwing it out and you're just throwing caution to the wind.
Well, I got the booster shot and that makes your accents better. But when I looked up the law of the tongue, it's a fascinating story that really only came out in the 1990s, even though it's set largely in the 19th century.
Is it a global law or is it a law restricted to the Anzac?
It's not just that it's restricted to the Anzacian mm-hmm. portions of the globe. It's restricted to the tiny port of Eden, Australia in New South Wales.
Hmm. Ambitious name.
They've got their own law there. I mean, Australia is a frontier country.
Sure, it is very frontier.
If there's places in South Dakota or Arizona that had their own law, surely a little tiny Australian 19th century harbor would be able to create its own lingual laws.
Absolutely. Well, it's a new Eden. so from Eden, Australia it may be the new law of humankind, right? That's what came from
maybe
Eden.
We will all descend from...
Maybe we get to eat apples now.
This is going to be a Twilight Zone where all of our future listeners are descended from a proto-Adam and a proto-Eve in Eden, Australia. The fact that it's called Eden actually leads to documentarians loving this place because they can call their National Geographic movie Killers in Eden or something like that.
Is it named after Is Eden named after a British prime minister instead of like Eden, the garden?
No, it predates the prime minister. So it must have just been so nice or so awful that you had to really attract people there.
Oh, sure. It's the old Greenland, Iceland
trick. Australia, that's not usually a problem because the early white people in Australia had to be there by force of penal law. I mean, you didn't really have to show them a nice subdivision. They kind of had to stay, right?
Yeah, right.
Eden, just so you can picture it. If Australia were to have a southeastern corner, and I strongly believe that it does not. Australia is not a Minecraft world with corners.
A southeastern corner, right? Okay, I can picture it.
But there is kind of a headland.
Tasmania
there's
down
kind
there.
Of a, yeah, like, but northeast of Tasmania. So it's kind of on the, it's what would be the southeastern corner if Australia were a big rectangle. Because there is kind of a headland that sticks out.
A dewlap.
I don't know if it's a dewlap. Well, is that a term geographers use?
Let's see. Let me just picture Australia here by looking at it.
You're not looking at anything. You're just kind of looking into the air and saying, "Let me picture Australia."
Right. So it's not a dewlap. It's more of a
promontory.
It has quite a bit of weight. So you might even call it like an abdomen. Right.
Why do you insist on personifying, anatomizing Eastern Australia?
It's like Australia's udder. Right, it's if Australia were the torso of a beef,
and we strongly suggest to the future that it is not.
It's like it's hanging down part.
It gets a little skinny down there in New South Wales. It does make a little udder, but the southeastern part of the udder like has a pokey part kind of. And
oh, sure, the pokey part.
And as a result, whales migrating north from the Antarctic.
We're not talking about New South Wales. Do,
yeah.
Or are we?
We're going to put the whales back in. So these were even further south whales because they were coming from the polar regions.
Okay.
But they come north during the season of the year when it gets too cold down there.
Whichever one that is.
For us, that would be the summer.
It's their summer.
It's their winter. It's their winter, our summer. And as a result of, you know, this pokey out part of New South Wales, whales pass New South Wales almost always within sight of Eden, Australia.
This is south of Sydney.
Yes.
And it's east of Melbourne.
Yes. And make sure you say Melbourne.
Melbourne.
So we don't get letters from people saying we're doing cultural appropriation by adding RR. Oh, no, wait. We're doing appropriation by saying it their way. We're doing imperialism by adding our letter R.
Boy, I can't keep them straight sometimes.
So either way,
I like to do both. We're in trouble. I like to put them together, and it's just like two great tastes that taste great together.
These are massive baleen whales coming up from the Antarctic. Big.
Not those toothed whales that we have up here in America.
Although
they have those.
They have those down there, too, in fact. They have orca, or as... I noticed that around here we don't say killer whales much, and is that part of our coastal left coast effete sensitivity that we want to rehabilitate the killer whale?
I think that orca. We're so proud of our orca.
We name them. We give their pods letters, and then we give the individual orca names, and they will. People from the Northwest or from the future don't know, but they appear in the paper. If Granny Matilda is ailing, that could be above the fold in the Seattle Times.
I have a friend who is
an orca.
No, well, I do. You know, orca is like the when we were kids, they were called killer whales, and yes. Orca is the kind of the new. It's our version of well, it was used to be Mount McKinley, now it's Mount Denali.
Oh, the woke mob won't let you say killer whales.
But no, but
John.
I love both ways of describing them. But I have a friend that's really into sharks. And she is so...
Is she four?
She's pro-shark, and she's so down on...
Is she 4 years old? That's when shark love usually peaks.
No, but at some level, like her fandom of sharks
it did
dates from when she was four.
At a young age.
But she's really down on killer whales. And I'm like, how do you not like it? And she's like, oh, they're jerks.
She has some ecological
No, she just
beef?
Thinks personality-wise, they're jerks. And I feel like that's a weird take, right?
Sharks are the...
Well, no, she would argue all day that sharks are great and they're kind and they're not attackers. They have a bad rep.
That's true.
They've been slurred, whereas orca are, you know, bullies and...
Does she think it's some kind of mammalian chauvinism?
Yeah, she does. She absolutely does. And she feels like all you orca lovers with your, you know, your coffee mugs and your pod names all crowding to the edge of the ferry boat to watch them go by.
It is fun when they stop the ferry.
It's nice. Because
by law, they cannot approach an orca pod. So if there's a local orca chilling, the ferry just has to kind of stop and wait for it to leave.
Yeah, but there's always some Bainbridge Island trial lawyer sitting in his BMW just pissed off.
Honking.
Come on! Get going! I've got a date in court.
The last time I was on the ferry, it was with a friend who has recently come to a new love of the orca because they're one of the few... animal societies, including ours, that has found a respectful and appropriate use for its post-menopausal matriarchs.
Oh, what did the orca do?
Oh, they run the show.
Well, yeah, like,
they're not
just
like
they do in our culture.
They're not like you can't. I mean,
I'm talking about my own family
and the California congressional delegation senatorial delegation for many years. But in general, you know, in the animal world, is not kind to females that cannot produce offspring anymore because evolutionarily, you know, they're a dead end. You need an advanced species, more advanced than ours, to be like, hey, these wise women have much to teach us. Let's
much to teach us.
Let's, you know, they have years of child rearing and herd or pack protecting. Let's listen.
I believe in our current human culture, we have decided that listening to older people is no longer a winning strategy of any kind, no matter their gender.
It was once the Simpsons told us that it was nothing they said would be interesting.
Yeah.
We fell for that.
Yeah. Don't trust anyone over 35 seems to be the new motto.
So I was on the ferry with this friend who is just reading up on these amazing orca matriarchs, and the ferry had to stop for orca. And how it was exciting. It was the happiest I'd ever seen her. She ran up on the deck. You guys, you got to come see. These are orca. They have much to teach us.
Did they come close to the boat?
They were quite close.
That's great.
And you know, if they approach you, you know, what are you going to do?
Which ferry was it?
Come on. Bainbridge Island. Okay. Oh, am I supposed to know the name?
Yeah.
Was it the Walla Walla or the Wenatchee, Ken? I don't remember.
Apparently.
It was Seattle Bainbridge.
So my, it was, okay, that's a good route. It's not the biggest route.
No, you want the 37-hour ferry to Ketchikan, obviously.
Apparently, my sister has decided that she's on Tinder now, or what are the dating ones? Tinder's
sure.
Like a sex one, right?
Well,
but there's,
they're all.
Yeah.
Are you saying there are dating websites that are not sex websites?
I don't know.
She's on Christian Mingle.
But she's J-Date. She met some guy and she was like, oh, what's your story? And he said, oh, you know, I'm the chief engineer on the Tillicum.
Ooh.
And the Tillicum
is this a pickup line?
No, the Tillicum.
I'm on the and I want to date you.
God, why are you the one that makes those jokes? Like I'm the dirty one.
We're gonna have Mark Miles bleep all of that, so nobody's gonna know what I said. Just you being annoyed.
Well, I probably shouldn't out this guy who's dating my sister, but the Tillicum is the oldest ferry in the operating ferry in the Puget Sound.
How old?
It goes back to 59.
Whoa.
And it is the first ferry boat I ever rode when I was 4 or 5 days old, and the first ferry boat my sister ever rode, because in the late 60s, it was on the Edmonds Kingston run.
What run is it on now?
Now it's up in the San Juans. It's old, and so they throw it up there. It's up there in Friday Harbor, just kind of like, well, this boat it's not going to sink today. We still need,
but it actually does, you know, do six runs to the triangle a day.
It goes from Anacortes to Friday Harbor
probably Lopez.
Yeah, Lopez, right? Does that little route anyway? So it was exciting. It was one of those Seattle things where I said, "What boat is he on?" And the answer was exciting.
Instead what could be of more like, Seattle than dating a ferry captain?
I know.
So you
were headed to Bainbridge Island for what reason? You going to get tacos in Winslow?
Yeah, we were just going to dinner in Winslow. They have some friends over there. I don't know Bainbridge people.
I know.
It was actually an interesting guy. He's his book just came out. He's a former like awful finance guy who I guess one morning was like, wait, that I'm an awful finance guy and I already have all this money.
And I live on Bainbridge. What a surprise.
No, he moved out west from Manhattan and became an academic. He's now researching homelessness problems and solutions.
See, this is why we can't tax the rich, Ken.
Because they'll eventually.
Yeah, sometimes they move out west and
eventually wake up and look in the mirror and think,
I'm not going to give my money away, but I am going to.
Their head will rise into the bathroom mirror and they'll think, that morning line of Coke is amazing.
Yeah.
And I need to quit my job.
I need to quit my job.
I need to come out to Seattle and help the unhoused.
Start going to wear some fuzzy sweaters, live on an island away from
any homeless people. the new research, which is actually like I've seen it in The Economist now, is it really ties homelessness strongly to
the law of the tongue.
The law of the tongue. Local economics and nothing else.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So if you're saying,
it's not a national problem.
It is, but I mean, that's a result of rents going up everywhere. And you actually, you know, if you look nationwide, the problem is tied to times and places where rents spike.
Local rents.
So it's, you know, instead of framing this as, this is addiction, this is mental illness, this is, a generation of blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, right.
It's really just people who...
It's a real estate problem.
It's a real estate problem. This is people who could have been on the fringe of urban life and now are just barely not making it.
It's why we advocate a housing first model here on the Omnibus program.
HF.
Pioneered in Salt Lake City.
That's true. Yeah, like a lot of good liberal, like a lot of good New Deal, good governance.
It was Salt Lake, right at the sharp end of the spear.
Salt Lake City is always a blue island, and they want to, you know, like a lot of Austin style blue islands, they want to stick it to the surrounding counties. And in Salt Lake, they do that by electing, you know, aging hippies, nice lesbians, you know, whatever they feel will annoy the rest of the state.
Yeah. It's a very small island.
It is.
Yeah.
It's, you can cross it in you know, the speed limit's 80, so you can cross it in half an hour.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shaped the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisiscle.com/podcast.
So anyway, Orca from the Fair. I love Orca.
Me too.
They are maybe the things your friend is skeptical of is actually the things that distinguishes the species. They are adaptive hunters. They're very intelligent.
Have you seen video of Orca hunting a great white shark in off the Great Barrier Reef?
I have not seen that video.
Oh, it's very exciting. Because you think of the great white as like the top predator, and there are these videos of Orca like.
Do they have to gang up on it?
Yeah.
Because they're collaborative hunters.
Yeah, they like team it.
They're very social animals. So I've seen them like, you know, doing tactics to chase sea lions on shore. And then there's a third orca that comes out of nowhere and goes, rah, 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 rah.
I've told you my orca story up in Beluga Point in Alaska. We pulled over to it's called Beluga Point because there are beluga whales there all the time. And we were driving along and the sea was just a riot of whales. And so we pulled off and jumped out of the car and ran over, and there were 100 or more beluga whales, and a beluga whale is a large dolphin looking, it's a big white whale. It's not the big white whale. It's a white colored porpoisey whale.
And cute.
Really cute-ish.
It's got a weird bumpy head.
And they're just they're in this huge pod. The sea is just boiling, and this is Turnagain Arm, so that it's got like it's a long tidal inlet, and when the tide comes out, it's actually often exposed
sand,
mud, and they're all pressed up against the shore, and it was like the craziest thing we'd ever seen. What are they doing? Like they almost seemed like they were going parallel to the shore, but so close in that it felt precarious.
Yeah, they'll. Orca will just jump up on the beach.
Well, so, and we're watching these, and these are giant whales. I mean, they're as big as this room, you know, but we're watching them and like, what could possibly be motivating? Why are there 100 of these all together anyway? But what could possibly be motivating them to act this way? And then we looked out and, you know, like a quarter mile offshore, you just saw those big sails of the orca fins, you know,
Tower.
It was just a whole pod of them. And they were herding these whales like cowboys. And I'd never seen anything like it. I still get like chills thinking about it because it was like, what am I watching? And why is this not something why is this not on the front page of the newspaper? Is this the only time this has ever happened? Or is this a thing that happens all the time? And this thing is called Beluga Point, and it really should be called Orca hunting ground
point. Eating beluga point.
Yeah. It was astonishing. We didn't see them kill a whale, but.
But they did. That's what they were doing.
They're killer whales, and they'll kill a whale, yo.
They're not whale. They're killer whales and whale killers.
Yeah. And shark killers.
I wonder if that's a reason for your friends. I mean, the whole reason for the sharks versus whales thing might be that sharks have a spiky, angry-looking fin, because all you can see of them is the dorsal fin?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with a whale, you see like a happy, round, kind of curved thing, toot-toot, coming through the water like a smokestack.
That's fun. All the Coast Salish, like, carved artwork and knitted artwork of orcas, it all has that happy...
They're cute.
Yeah, dorsal fin.
They're not like kind of fang-forward.
They're not fang-forward.
The way the jaws... paperback cover was. Mm-hmm.
They don't have those dead eyes. They have lively eyes.
They probably have eyelids. They probably have cheeks. Yeah. They probably laugh and their eyes crinkle up. They, yeah, what you're describing, orca hunting in pods, big super pods, sometimes herding animals, learning new strategies. Orca can adapt, you know, orca will figure out what hunting techniques worked last time and they'll do it again. They'll assign each other roles. And the ones we have around here just eat fish, you know, it's the ones up in the permanent residents of our pods in the San Juans just eat fish, but we have transients that come through here with a taste for
seal,
mammal flesh. Yeah. They'll eat sea lions. And
so our resident population in Puget Sound that never migrates, they're salmon eaters.
You're talking about the people?
This is true of both orca and people.
They eat nothing but Costco farmed salmon.
But the ones that come up from California and go to Alaska eat other bigger things.
Yeah. They like, and it's just, you know, different populations with different hunting tastes and patterns. And these orca that come up from Antarctica following the whale populations do so because they love they're like your beluga point whales.
They want a baby whale.
They love a delicious hot-blooded snack. These baleen whales, they're just eating plankton, minding their own business.
Sure.
And they...
Placid cows.
They can be herded like cows or sheep.
Right.
And in the town of Eden in New South Wales, the resident orca actually worked out a novel strategy that I think is unprecedented in the history of cetacean studies. At the mouth of Twofold Bay, which is kind of the inlet there, the harbor, the orca would swim into the bay up to where the human settlement was in the 19th century, and they would slap their fins on the water. They'd flop their fins on the water. And that would wake up the human residents if it was nighttime. And they would say, oh boy, the killers are home. And they would all hop out into their whale boats. And the residents of Eden, New South Wales, would head into the water to hunt collaboratively, to hunt baleen whales alongside the orcopods.
No.
Yes.
And the whales are training the humans to do this.
Yes. The whales are, I mean, the...
The whales are like, hey, there's whales here!
Well, the whales have the advantage of living in the water.
Right.
They're going to see when passing humpbacks or minke whales or whatever are rounding the point.
Right.
Heading north. And this went on for... The story wasn't well known until the 90s when a local documentarian named Greg McKee, an Australian documentarian, saw... in the local killer whale museum, because this was kind of an Australian whaling capital in the
Eden,
yeah, in the you know, the heyday and then the waning days of the world whaling industry. They have a killer whale museum, kind of remembering their heritage, and that's what founded the settlement. And there's a big skeleton of a killer whale there named Old Tom. So the killer whale has a name.
And he had a collar that said Old Tom. If found, return.
He had distinctive markings, as we'll see. But McKee, you know, researching local legends about Old Tom, found that, yeah, the reason why this town had named all the killer whales is because it knew them as coworkers individually.
Wow.
You know, they would all clock in together. And so he tracked down the four surviving eyewitnesses of this era, who were now all 103-year-old women and 96-year-old men, and had them tell the stories. And all of these four survivors agreed on the contours of this early 20th century world inherited from the 19th century, where orca hunted alongside men in Twofold Bay.
Wow. Have you ever seen I went through a phase where I was watching for some reason. Oh, you know what it was? I was living in my old house, the farm, where we used to record. And it's an old house, and I got rats in the attic. And there were always rats in the attic. When I bought the house, there were rats in the attic. And I spent the 12 years that I lived there trying to fight the rats in the attic. Sometimes I would get ahead of the rats. Sometimes they would get ahead. If I ever lapsed, if I ever got lazy, you know.
Eternal vigilance.
There they were again.
It's the watchword.
I fought them, and I had some great victories. Boy, there were some days that will live in infamy. But also, you know, I was a sap sometimes. And so at one point I started watching videos of ratters.
Dogs?
Yeah. And you know. Don't go looking for these videos if you are sensitive.
If you've never wanted to see a Yorkie eat a rat the same size as it.
But there are, you know, this is a very popular sport, I guess, in Scotland, because there's, you know.
Nothing to do.
Think of all the Scottish sports. you can imagine how exciting this one is. The other ones are like, throw a tree.
Throw a tree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, well, a farmer will go out and with a pitchfork and like turn over some ground and the rats will go everywhere. And then these little Yorkies will chase the rats and grab them and shake them as hard as they can and then go and grab another one and shake it as hard as they can. It's really something.
We had terriers growing up, and that's just an evolutionary thing they've been bred to do. Terrier would always just take its toy and go.
Yeah, I mean, usually they're just shaking your sock, but
usually, yeah, it's trying to kill a. We have a squeaky toy that's a Costco hot dog, and they just murder that thing.
But to see them do it to an actual rat is a new level of like, oh wow, you know, this is like carnage, especially when there's like 16 dogs and 600 rats. It's really something. But one of the videos I watched was a team of a Yorkie and a ferret, and the ferret would go into buildings and go where the Yorkie couldn't, chase the rats out.
Because ferrets have no bones.
And rats are terrified of ferrets, I guess, for obvious reasons.
I would be.
I'm sort of terrified of ferrets. Well, usually a ferret is a harbinger of a hippie.
Yeah.
Or they used to be.
It's somebody walking their ferret in Portland.
But watching this video of the two animals working as a team, and, you know, you would think that the dog would want to kill the ferret. It looks like a rat. But the dog and the ferret are just touching noses. They love each other. And
they can sense a common enemy.
Yeah, the ferret is just, it's like when skunks and cats eat out of the same bowl. They saw like a, and I do feel like humans and orca are like the dog and ferret of, what am I trying to say? Of the sea. Humans being, of course, a sea animal.
Is the orca the ferret?
The orca is the ferret, yes.
The orca is the ferret of the sea.
The human is the dog.
Yeah, we've often said that on the show, that the orca is the ferret of the sea. I mean, as a result of this collaborative relationship, you know, Eden had advanced access to all kinds of whaling technologies that would be make them the envy of the world. Like, they could do night whaling.
I mean, literally, whales are the whaling technology that is the envy of the world.
They've got a secret. They've recruited some evil whales to their side. Turncoat whales. They've got a spy on the inside.
Yeah.
They've turned some of the cetaceans.
Because killer whales don't identify as whales.
Is that true?
They don't see themselves as whales.
They're like, we're too small and cool.
Yeah, they're like, oh, yeah, whales, sure.
We're more like these humans. We have... you know, wise matriarchs, communal living, like to eat big, beefy other mammals.
Because there's no such thing as like a murder cow, right? A murderous cow. There's clear distinctions on land between prey and predator. And we call killer whales. It's a misnomer. They should be. We should.
Just because they eat other whales, they should lose their whale chip.
They're not whales. They're something else. You know. We eat cows. It doesn't mean that we're like toothed cows or something. What am I trying to say?
I think they might be more closely related than you and a cow.
You think a baleen whale and a killer whale are more closely related than I am to a cow?
Yes.
Why?
Well, now that I say that, maybe not you in particular, but a less bovine human.
Sure.
You're more cow-like than most.
I'm more cow-like than most. But didn't
you sit and chew slowly?
Didn't some ancient ancestor of the whales live on land for a while?
Yeah, and got fed up.
Yeah, but is that true of baleen whales too? Did the ancient ancestor live on land and then become two different kinds of whales?
No, I think the same guy went back in the water,
right?
And then, you know, spawned an infinite population of.
When it was on land, was it a cow? Did it resemble more closely a cow?
It was actually just a whale, but with those two little feet with shoes, like one of those wind-up walking toys. You can't see it, but I'm doing with my hand the thing that those things do.
All right, go on.
So they could whale at night. The head of the whaling colony there, the head of the whaling industry, was Fearless George Davidson. And, you know, when the killer whales signaled that there were baleen whales passing by, he would wake up everybody. They'd all ride their horses down to the beach, get in their whaleboats, and head out.
I bet they had great mustaches. These
and they would communication would go both ways. They would slap on the water with their oars, you know, kind of mimicking a tail flop, and that would call the orca over. And they would kind of work as cattle dogs. Old Tom, the, you know, yeah, the strongest and sneakiest among them, but
or cattle ferret.
But they would, he would be the ferret of the sea. The orca would go out and kind of round up the whales and just basically harass them.
Yeah.
Tire them out, keep them from surfacing.
Yeah.
Because then they couldn't breathe. A lot of people don't know this, John, but whales are mammals.
Okay.
And, you know, hundreds of people would like line the cliff tops in the morning to see what the result of the night's hunt had been.
And then how did they divvy up the spoils?
That, my friend, is the law of the tongue. So, you know, once the whales are tired out, it's very easy for the harpooners to get there into the rowboats and, right, and as they say it, fasten, you know, which means impale this poor baleen whale. And while, you know, while that whole process was going on, the orcas would circle to keep sharks away. Sorry to your friend.
Mm-hmm. Good.
And, you know, there are, you know, all kinds of cases of, you know, diaries of the time have stories about, you know, a man going overboard and the orca pulling it to the surface, mm-hmm, or by the same token, an orca getting tangled in somebody's harpoon line and the men rescuing it. You know, it all seems to be just a great working environment.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like there'd be some OSHA problems because people keep falling in, but.
Well, but then there was that young orca girl that fell in love with the human boy and their parents didn't approve.
It's the tale of Orkio and Whaleyette.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shape the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisisCLE.com/podcast.
The system that had been worked out is this. After a whale had been killed, they would leave it overnight in the bay for the orca, who would eat their they would eat the lips and the tongue, but leave the skeleton and the blubber, which is what the humans wanted, what would power the whaling industry of Eden, Australia. And every eyewitness agrees that this was the deal, as improbable as this sounds, that the whales would just eat, the killer whales would eat their part and leave the blubber. And then the next morning, the men could tow it into port and begin harvesting the whale. And there are period photos showing whales being brought in missing lips and tongue. So there's documentary evidence that the law of the tongue had been agreed upon.
Can you live on lips and tongue?
So this is the interesting part of the story to me. How do you hammer out this accord with the orca?
Because, you know, normal predators also want the spleen and the liver and the contents of the stomach?
Well, if you're running high-speed chases through very cold water, you'd think what these orca need is caloric intake at all costs.
Right.
In which case, man, eat the blubber.
Right.
But maybe the whales are just big enough that a pod can survive just on their favorite delicacies.
Maybe they're also eating the calves and that didn't make it into the story, right? Because
that could be. And also sea lions and fish and, you know, they've got other sources of nutrition out there.
But still, this seems like a lot of work on the orca's part for just lips and tongue.
Unless that's what they want, man.
Like, it's the delicacy.
Sure. I mean, in Eden, their people use every part of the humpback.
Except lips and tongue.
They can somehow do without the lips and tongue. I wonder if...
These are gourmet orca, and this is like the truffle oil of the orca world?
Yeah, but are orca picky eaters? Apparently. I guess the ones up here won't eat sea lion.
Right.
The
I also won't eat sea lion.
The modern scholarly, like an orca... Like a resident orca, you will not eat sea lion.
No, but I'll eat a Costco salmon all day.
The scholarly consensus today seems to be that this arrangement actually predates white settlement of New South Wales, that the Yuin Aborigines in the area also were whalers.
Oh.
You know, not because they needed blubber for lamps. They weren't trading the whale oil, but they were
just a big old food thing.
Just a big steak. Mm-hmm. They would see a humpback and it would turn into a steak like in a Looney Tunes cartoon. Mm-hmm. And then they would go hunt it. And, you know, they probably did not have even the whale boat or harpooning technologies of these turn of the 20th century colonists. So they would be reliant on orca technology, Day of the Dolphin kind of orca technology.
Right.
And
so old Tom was actually had probably some wisdom handed down from some older Tom.
Yeah.
And older, like work with the folks that live here.
And older Tom had, you know, wisdom handed down from, you know, whatever got hammered out between his ancestors and the original Aboriginal people on the coast.
Right.
There's stories of the Aborigine, you know, whoever the wise man was, you know, some kind of elder or shaman would light a fire on the beach to signal to the whales. And then he would kind of do a ritual drama for the benefit of the orca, where he would kind of hobble around pretending to be lame and weak. And that would be the sign to the orcas that, oh, hey, the, our shore brethren are hungry. Look how much they're struggling.
Yeah.
It's time for the hunt.
They were sky hopping. The whales were.
What is sky
hopping? Spy hopping. It's when they pop their heads up out of the water and look at things on land.
Yes.
Right.
They were keeping an eye, and apparently they're good enough at human gestures and mannerisms and posture to be like, man, this guy could really use a whale steak right now. Let's do him a solid. And in the Aboriginal mythology of the area, the whales are actually kind of part of the tribe.
Yeah,
like they're not livestock at all. They're kind of like brothers.
This is like Dances with Wolves, except in Australia and with whales.
Swims with water wolves. And so apparently these traditions would have transferred to the early white colonists when the Aboriginal people were prized for their harpooning skills. You know,
sure.
The first white people come, they don't know what they're doing. They can't kill a whale, but they've got people who have been there forever. And so
plot point in Moby Dick, all of the best harpoonists were all from
they're all from
Micronesia.
They're all from the Southern Isles. And so the same thing happened here. The Aborigine people become harpoonists in the whale boats. And that's when the law of the tongue gets passed to the, you know, George Davidson's ancestors, the people of Eden. But, you know, I have to think that, you know, how does the deal begin? I have to assume that the lips and the tongue are maybe the favorite part.
Yeah.
Of the whales. So the whales are basically just taking what they want. And are they aware that they are leaving something behind for their pod mates? Maybe. I guess that kind of collaborative behavior would exist, or the pod would not survive if people weren't in the habit of skipping a meal because they thought their hunting buddy needed one, right?
Well, what's interesting is that as incredible as it sounds, I believe there's no record of a killer whale in the wild killing a human being.
I think that's true.
And so that must be true back to ancient times, and the people on the Pacific Northwest coast and in all these different places who lived on the water and interacted with killer whales all the time must have also known that if you fell in the water, you were safe with them. There must have been this kind of interaction.
I mean, that's true of
back 10,000 years.
I mean, that goes to classical times. There's all these stories among early seafaring people about how the dolphins are our friends.
Yeah.
You know, that somebody falls in and then the dolphins tow him to shore and he becomes Prince of the Dolphin Men. And, you know, there's lots of
Prince
maritime.
Prince of the Dolphin Men. Yeah, I knew him. It was the late 80s.
There's a fixture on the drag scene.
But
the maritime tradition of you know, wise and helpful sea mammals, you know, helping a brother out goes back millennia.
Sure. And if you're a fisher people on the water for food, on the water looking for food, and there are orca all around doing the same, you must make common cause with them. If not in practice, at least in premise. Right? Like you would see them and tip your hat, like, ahoy, good hunting. And any way that you could, you know, I'm sure that orca used to herd salmon in such a way that the Coast Salish found, you know, it's why they're on all the totem poles.
Yeah.
Right? They're not an insignificant Well,
I would put the biggest, coolest animal on the totem pole too, even if it wasn't bringing me any fish.
Yeah, but the biggest, coolest animal is probably a brown bear, but you never see any brown bear on totem poles.
I don't know. I think an orca might be cooler than a bear. They squirt. Bear don't spray.
Are you sure about that?
Yeah. If you're getting sprayed by a bear, it's like probably the last thing you'll smell.
I mean, but that's the thing. An orca is a big, cool mammal that's your friend.
Yeah.
Where a bear is a big, cool mammal
that killed your uncle.
That's not your friend. That's right.
The law of the tongue. So all these movies, you know, these Dances with Wolves kind of movies always end with betrayal by civilization.
Yep. Here it comes.
The cavalry rides in and then...
It's hard to imagine.
The Avatar planet gets mined.
Hard to imagine that industrialized whaling is the good guy in this story, but well, tell me what happens.
Well, that's kind of the funny thing about this whole dynamic is it's supposed to be heartwarming that the human and the whales are working together. Oh, yeah. They're working together to kill other cuter whales.
Right.
You know?
To murder the peaceful whales.
Yeah. The humpback never did anything to anybody. They just wanted to strain plankton.
But it was when the explosive harpoon arrived that people stopped collaborating with whales?
It actually seems to be from the black hearts of the Edenites themselves.
Oh,
there's,
dear.
Just as in the original Eden, there is trouble in paradise. There's a story from the 1920s about a minke whale that's being hunted by a pod of orca. It, you know, they successfully herd it up onto the beach, but in the process, one of the orca also gets stranded. And George Davidson is coming up in hot pursuit in his whale boat. You know, he'll be able to, you know, harvest the beach whale and maybe they can help their orca buddy get back in the water. But before he's even on shore, another villager named Harry Sills.
Oh boy.
Just steps out of the brush.
Don't do it, Harry.
And just... is like, oh boy, an orca.
No, don't do it.
And kills the orca
and
takes its teeth.
Oh,
and
no.
So by the time Davidson's boat gets there, he's like, mate.
No.
What are you doing?
No, mate.
You know, for whatever reason, Harry was not part of the whaling culture or didn't share the kind of village respect, healthy respect for the killer whales.
He just sees the money in the scrimshaw orca tooth.
Free teeth.
And the orca offshore.
And that's what you'd think. You're an Alaskan. You would see those teeth and be like, oh, baby.
No. I'd run down and help my orca friend back.
You'd roll him into the water?
So you're saying old Tom and all the rest are offshore sky popping, spy hopping.
As we say.
And they're like, what the what?
Yeah, and the humans are pissed too. There's still Aborigines in the region who, you know, again, love and respect the orca. And they are pissed. They threaten, you know, they threaten to attack the village. That, you know, they're threatening Harry's life. The cops are involved.
Oh boy.
The whole story ends with the UN people actually leaving the area because they feel like the bonds, the law of the tongue has been violated.
It's been desecrated.
The bond between man and orca will be no more.
So did the whalers like row back out and be like, no, sorry. I mean, how do you apologize to an orca pod?
This is a plot point in all these movies where like, you know, The good white guy has to be like, hey, Pocahontas is dead. I'm super sorry. Like, these guys were not chill at all. Like I said, they were going to be chill.
Right.
But how do you do that to an orca? You can't speak their pops and squeaks.
Yeah, there's always somebody in the U.S. cavalry that shoots the friend wolf.
Right. There's one dingus.
And it's like, oh, I will fight no more forever, except actually sorry.
And it would have happened the other way if the orca had just been like, if some orca had gone rogue and been like, that is one cute.
Human baby.
Cute human baby. I'm gonna take a bite. I mean, that would have ended stuff on our end too, I think.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, this is already in the 1920s. The whaling industry of Eden is not doing great. There's some speculation as to why. You know, it may just be that offshore whaling was starting to get technologically good. You know, this becomes the age of more industrialized whaling where, you know, the South Pacific whale populations just get hammered. Only 5% of these Antarctic whales survive. These big baleen whales survive. 1% of the blue whales that were around at the time survived that decade.
Isn't that astonishing?
99% of all blue whales. It's just... You just put enough boats in the right place, and even though the ocean's wide, you can just get almost all of them.
It's incredible.
It's awful. And as a result of that, there's no food supply for the orca. Orca are hungry. On December 17th, 1930, the carcass of an orca is seen floating into Twofold Bay. and the people head out in their boats, and they're astonished to see it's Old Tom himself.
Huh.
And the accounts of the time say that his stomach is empty. It's possible that like George had been actually hand feeding him, and that's why he was, you know, he was heading close to shore, because the humans were actually just now hand feeding the orca because there weren't enough whales in the, you know, into heading into the bay anymore.
They were throwing cows out there.
That's what they were doing.
What do you hand feed an orca? I mean, it's got to be something interesting.
Yeah.
I wonder if an orca would eat a cow. I'm sure it would.
I mean, there's probably not a lot of, in the wild, there's probably not a lot of liminal areas where that can happen.
You know,
cows grazing close enough to deep water.
I have a lot of bad stuff to say about the internet. I don't like the internet at all. It's a terrible place. It's caustic. But it does exist to ask, would an orca eat a cow? Let's see what the internet says. Killer whales.
The problem you're going to have is that maybe a cow is a name for a female killer whale. Like, don't they use cow and calf and bull for killer whales?
Well, yeah, I bet they do. Killer whale facts.
.com.
What is this? So killer whales, orcas. Oh, it says walruses are related to dogs.
Well, first of all, that's not super relevant.
Killer whales have more genes in common with cows than any other species of mammal.
Well, there you go.
I've been saying this whole episode, and you've just been rolling your eyes at me.
Well, then maybe killer whales won't eat cows. They're like, that'd be like family.
Walruses have more in common with dogs and wolves. Manatees, called sea cows, were actually closely related to elephants.
That one I can see.
So this suggests, as I was suggesting, that marine mammals evolved down separate paths. Now, maybe not whales, but
I'm pretty sure all the whales are the same path.
You know,
you're just talking about manatees and walruses.
You're so smart.
there is one story that really may explain. You know, it may have just been declining food supply, dwindling whale herds passing by. But there is a story even more upsetting than the Harry Sill story that was told to the 1990s era documentarian by an old woman named Margaret Brooks, who was, I believe, the daughter of, she was born Margaret Logan. She was the daughter of J.R. Logan, who is kind of the evil, you know, the guy that wants to dig for gold in the Pocahontas cartoon.
Right.
Because he's like a wealthy farmer. You know, he's made his money in agriculture, and then he's come to Eden just to retire, and nobody's going to tell him what's what.
He's got a diamond tie tack, and he...
or whatever the Austrian equivalent of that is. Opal. Yeah,
an opal tie tack.
He's got an opal tie tack. And I'm sure he's just evil, like the David Ogden Stiers guy in Pocahontas. And so Logan is out with Davidson and the other whalers in pursuit of a humpback. And after they catch the carcass, you know, the other whalers say,
they capture the carcass?
Well,
they have to capture the whale first.
After they harpoon the whale and after they bring in the carcass.
Yes.
They've got it. They're towing a big humpback behind their whale boat.
Or humpy, as we say here in the Northwest.
Is that what we call a humpback carcass?
We call them humpies.
When they're dead only?
No. When they're alive.
Oh, okay.
When they're dead, I think they become a humpback carcass. But when they're alive, they're humpies.
Humpies. Don't think I ever say that.
That's an Alaska...
Is it?
Turn of phrase.
Was the Humpty Dance huge in Alaska?
Humpy.
Oh, okay. And the, you know, the other whalers in the boat assume they're going to leave Humpy out for the orca to enjoy their
lip
lips,
tongue.
Their tongue,
uh-huh.
Maybe that little groove between your nose and your mouth.
The lip and tongue does feel like the name of a weird pub, right? Like an Australian pub.
With a picture of a killer whale with blood coming down its...
Ye old lips and tongue.
On the teeth on the old wooden sign. And Logan says, no, I'm not going to do that. Let's just tow it back in. It's getting late.
Oh.
And the men are all like, but the law of the tongue. And he's like, but the law of the tongue. But the law of the tongue.
Wow,
you know?
This guy's a jerk.
He's a... And so he just starts to tow the carcass in, and all the orca are like, wait, what's going on?
Yeah.
Like,
law this of the is tongue, not, bro.
We got to eat. And so old Tom in particular comes up to the boat, and the boat won't stop. So he just like grabs the tow rope that they're using, the cable they're using to pull the whale in. and, you know, starts trying to pull the whale away from the,
yeah,
the cheating humans.
Give us our lips and tongue.
And in the ensuing struggle over the carcass, old Tom actually lose, according to Margaret Brooks, who was, you know, in her 90s telling the story, actually lost some teeth.
Oh.
And if you look at the skeleton of old Tom in the Eden Killer Whale Museum today, you'll see that it is actually missing teeth in a way that may have been fatal. So maybe it wasn't just dwindling food supply. Like, these missing teeth have led to abscesses that go all the way through the jawbone, you know, up into the brain.
Oh, no.
So it's possible that what we have is one bad apple who's like, law of the tongue, schma of the tongue, and, you know, leads to the death of beloved local mascot, old Tom, ending the law of the tongue forever, and this darling Disney-ready story about the murder of baleen whales.
And what is the relationship between current-day residents of Eden, and I presume they have it's a small town still, but they probably have a waterfront aquarium, and they probably have they have like a smoothie place and maybe a boardwalk where you unicycle. Do they have a relationship to the local orca pod?
No. Well, today Eden is still, you know, it's one of the few deep water harbors in that part of the world. So it's the leading fishing port in New South Wales, big fishing fleet. And I think cruise ships can even dock there. But sadly, the orca are scarce. And maybe that's a result of the, you know, legacy of the terrible acts of 1930 or whatever it was. Guilt over old Tom's death. But it might just be, you know, the increasing spread of Norwegian and other whalers into that part of the world.
My question to you, Ken, is do you believe that humans are redeemable? Like, we seem to do this every time, ruin a good thing. And it's always, we always blame it on one cigar chomping somebody.
I ordered you not to fire. Who did that?
But it seems like it's really just something baked in. If it wasn't that cigar chomping ding dong, it would have been a different one.
Otherwise, it wouldn't keep happening.
Yeah. So is it just that we can't be trusted and that futurelings who are waving their tentacles in agreement right now going, yeah, that's right. Although futurelings who are squid-based would also not have a very good relationship with any toothed whale.
Well, you know, if we have progressive orca-descended listeners, they're probably very aware, as are progressives today, of the evils and peccadillos of their own species.
That's
maybe
right.
They feel guilt over the orca's fault.
Think about all of the whales and the whales they've killed.
It flatters us to think about all the bad people doing the bad people things. But, you know, future orcas will probably be like, well, you know, people are people, but
sure,
really our ancestors should have known better.
It's the orca crime or the orca crimes we need to atone for. But think about the giant squid that have been eaten by all of the Moby Dicks. Like, it's really, if the squid are our future.
The squid win.
Yeah, right.
If the squid win, they are not going to like this kind of orca hagiography we're doing.
The squid overlords are going to have something to say about all these whales.
As recently as 2010, the people of Eden did observe three killer whale pods in the region.
Three whole pods.
Who are not usually there. They must have been passing through or outside their usual hunting grounds. But it did make the papers because late 2010 would make it exactly the 80th anniversary of old Tom's death.
Oh.
Which at least opens the possibility that orca not only do remember old Tom, but also have a base 10 calendar system.
And they're here for like a rapprochement.
Maybe. Or maybe they're tourists.
What's interesting here in the Northwest is that what surely was a human orca like collaborative ecosystem prior to the 19th century or prior to the middle half of the 19th century, you know, it's completely gone. The white settlers that came here weren't really whalers. We were busy coal mining and chopping down the forests. And so we turned our back on the orca, and they were like, say what? And we, you know, we eliminated the tribes ecosystem. And so the orca around here may have been trying to communicate with us all this time. They might be like, what about the good old days when we used to fish side by side?
Stop building these dams.
Yeah. What about the, you're killing the salmon before we even get to them. And then with the ferry boats and all these tourist ferries where you're out, like, you know, you're happy to see us, but like, we have work to do here.
And they know we like salmon too. They're probably mystified.
Yeah.
They're like, look, the one thing we had in common was we were both super into salmon.
You love salmon. We love salmon. Why are you doing such a bad job? You're not only killing the salmon by putting dams in the rivers, but you're also not even down here with us, like, doing your half of the job, it's which was whacking your paddles on the side of your dugout canoes.
It's like when you're assigned, like, a group project in school, and yet, you know, one person's going to get the same grade as you, but, like, what's he doing? He's sabotaging the whole project. The orca are like, I can't believe I have to do all this by myself, and this is due tomorrow, you idiots.
There was some matriarch in one of these local pods who died in the last 40 years, who was the last one who had a story about back when we used to collaborate with the humans and all was right with the world. And so her granddaughter is out there right now somewhere in Puget Sound, kind of telling some...
I hope she told the story.
Telling some story.
Humans didn't always suck.
Yeah, where the young orca are like, what? That's...
Humans aren't redeemable, Grandma.
That's not very likely. And that concludes The Law of the Tongue. Entry 705.JB0712. Certificate number 46594 in the omnibus. Futurelings, in the unlikely event that social media still exists in your era and that it accommodates all species, which seems very unlikely, most species would be wise enough not to develop social media.
How does the internet even work underwater? Is it all transmitted by whale song or squid clicking?
I mean, what is the internet?
Like, if you want to know if a killer whale can ever eat a cow and you're underwater, what do you do?
I do believe that the internet is probably going to be regarded as a form of song it's the only kind of analog that works. Like, what were insane songs? Yeah, what were you guys doing? Oh, we were singing to each other, but it was like there was no tune and no one was listening to any of the other singers.
It was like 260 BPM. It was just insane. It was like it made everyone crazy.
A billion screamers, you know, all crying out at once and then hopefully being silenced, inshallah. But yeah, it's a song, right? And so it would condensed be communicable across the oceans. The future internet will return to its natural state, which is whale song and every once in a while a piercing cry of a sea eagle.
It is kind of interesting how the early sounds of the internet, the modem handshaking, how it kind of sounds like a screaming sea eagle or a clicking dolphin.
Yeah, right.
We're going to go back to our fax machine roots.
Beep, boop, 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 boop. Anyway, yeah, so human beings or some, you know, whatever form of humanoid is listening to this show.
The noid.
Go, avoid yourself. Go to the internet and look for Omnibus and Futurelings. Look for Ken Jennings if you want his
pithy,
lighthearted, pun-based humor. Look for me if you are really a detective, if you're watching The Detectives. You can email us directly, though, which is probably a better strategy if you want to really communicate with us. If you're going to tweet at Ken, good luck. You'd better be pretty darn funny.
You're going to be one clicking dolphin in a vast ocean.
You'd better have a blue check mark next to your name because Ken only deals with blue check marks. but you can email us at theomnibusproject@gmail.com. You can hang out with other futurelings on the internet by just putting futurelings into the internet, and it will deposit into your lap futurelings of all stripes.
It's like a slot machine.
It will.
Boy, this thing's paying off.
It will. It will deposit them
ka-ching, ka-ching, ka-ching,
like ka-ching. So many baleen whales into the harbor of your small whaling town. You can mail us things, and usually at this point, Ken is unwrapping a box, but he's not doing it today. So it only means that you have not been mailing us enough things.
I have a little bit of mail.
But you can mail us things at P.O. Box 55744 Shoreline, Washington 98155. And you can support the show. Today's show was a listener suggestion.
Thanks, Matt.
Matt is a supporter at patreon.com/omnibusproject.
Listeners, from our vantage point in your distant past, we have no idea how long this civilization survived. We hope and pray that the catastrophe we fear may never come, but if the worst comes soon, this recording, like all our recordings, may be our final word. But if Providence allows, we hope to be back with you soon for another entry in the Omnibus.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shaped the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisisCLE.com/podcast.
Hi there, my name's Andy.
And my name's Anna.
And we are two of the four hosts of the podcast No Such Thing as a Fish. We present every week the most amazing, wonderful, insane, hilarious, bizarre facts you've ever heard.
Facts like, did you know America has a national grocery bag packing competition?
Did you know, Anna, the company Volkswagen sells more sausages than it does cars?
Yes, we've got those two facts and about a billion more in our podcast archives for you to listen to. We chat about them, we laugh about them, we make the occasional terrible pun.
It's great fun. It's called No Such Thing as a Fish. Why don't you listen now?